90.3 Near FM.
Thomas Jefferson said, "A democracy is nothing more than mob rule, where 51% of the people take away the rights of the other 49%. Good evening, you're welcome to International Politics near 90.3 FM's look at the world of international politics and even national politics of international significance. I'm Peter Carney. I'm with you Friday evening, fortnightly at 6 p.m. Of course, this is the last Friday we'll be with you. We're moving to Wednesdays from Wednesday week. I think that's October the 9th or something like that. But anyway, you can adjust your calendar and all that kind of stuff. On this day, the 27th of September, some significant happenings. 1066, you had William the Conqueror and his army set sail from the mouth of the Somme River, beginning the Norman conquest of England. 1540, the Jesuits received their charter from Pope Paul III. So the Jesuits started this day in 1540. And in 1821, Mexico gains quote-unquote independence from Spain. Political births, nothing, practically nothing on this day of anyone of any political significance born, apart from, of course, as you all know, Mr. Vasil Drudinets. 1937, the 8th Prime Minister of the Ukraine. How could you not know? God, goodness me. It was on the tip of everybody's tongue. It's on camera up there. Okay, anyway, so moving on. So what we have for you this evening, a mix of different events here. Where are we going to tonight? Palestine, Ireland and Iran. First up is Ireland, and we're going back to Belfast to have a look at what is happening up there still. The protests, the quote-unquote protests by the Loyalists, Orange, Unionists, whichever label you care to use for them in Belfast. They're still protesting at Twaddle or Twaddle in response to the decision not to allow them parade up through Ardoyne for a second time, and we're going to be speaking to Fry Hughes about that in a few moments. After that, we're going to be speaking about Palestine and indeed some other stuff, more from Sammy Mukadem. He's in studio here with us. Do you want to say good evening there, Sammy?
Good evening.
Good stuff. And there'll be somebody, maybe somebody else joining us later on, but a bit more about that later. Okay. Then we're going to be talking about Iran as well. I'm going to be speaking to Mahdi Bahman, who's a sociology researcher here in Dublin, talking to us about President Rouhani's visit to the UN, the significance of that, and so on. Okay, so as I said, we're up first is the protests in Twaddle, and I'm not sure if I've actually got the pronunciation of that right. Is that how you pronounce it, Fra?
Well, it's called Twaddle Avenue, but a lot of people think it is a lot of twaddle. So you could use either or, Peter, would be correct.
Either one will do. Good stuff. So, Fry, you were on the show a couple of weeks ago and you were telling us at that stage about the threat to the Holy Cross School. And we spoke briefly that time about Twaddle and the protests that are going on there. Can you just fill us in on what exactly is happening there, particularly in relation to the Parades Commission's decision and the visit of Richard Haass as to the stopping of playing music from Wednesday evening onwards?
OK, well, yes, thankfully there's been no real violence offered to the three local schools in North Belfast that were under threat by the Red Hand offenders. But yes, I was actually up at the interface between Twaddle Avenue, which is on the Shankill Woodville Road, Loyalist area of North Belfast, and the Ardoyne Mountain View and Deals, which would be the Nationalist Republican area. And Twaddle Avenue at the roundabout is the interface. On Wednesday night, the Parades Commission had banned the playing of music by the Orange Order associated bands that march with the orders and their bannerets. And what happened was at least one band turned up and the guys were all wearing boiler suits and they were wearing some form of like ski masks, balaclavas. And they played songs like the Famine Song, you know, which is associated with the Glasgow Rangers Football Club.
Yeah.
All about how the famine's over, time for the Irish to leave Scotland. It seemed to be a racist kind of anti-Catholic song. They played The Sash and they played several other tunes and they played between about 7:45. These nightly protests took place directly after Mass in the local Holy Cross Catholic Church, which is about 15 metres from the interface. And I'm just looking at the Parades Commission determination for tonight. There is a band parade due to start at 7:30. Shankill Road, Woodville Road, Ballygamartin Road, Twaddle Avenue, outward time at 7:30, return time at 9:00. Number of bands, 4. Expected number of participants is 150, and expected numbers of supporters, while unknown, is probably going to be around 200. So you can expect 4 bands. The music, again, has been banned, but there's no doubt they're going to play. And you'll have up to 350 people at an interface, you know, cranking up the tension and the violence, potentially between 7:30 and 9:00 tonight.
Right, so that the ban on playing music has effectively been ignored. I mean, particularly from the posts I've seen that you put up on the group, that they've continued to play. Is there a time limit, or was there a time limit put on that? It was, they said, no music after 7 or something of that nature.
I think the determination was no music at all. When right. you go, if you've got a chance to look in the Parades Commission, NI, it actually gives you all the parades and the time to start, the time to finish, how many people have applied for the protests, and if there are conditions imposed, and it says no music. So they're breaking the determinations, but they had an illegal march last Saturday.
Yeah.
2,500 people through Belfast City Centre, up the Shankill Road, up the Twaddale. So, I mean, they're paying absolutely no attention to the rule of civil law in society.
And are there any, or are there supposed to be any implications of breaking a parade commission's decision, or are they merely recommendations?
See, this has been a whole kind of bone of contention ever since that band, I think it was the young Conway Volunteers, played that song, the famine song, and danced outside St Patrick's Roman Catholic Church in Donegal Street. The police were saying that's an issue for the Parades Commission. The Parades Commission were saying that's a policing issue on the ground, and eventually members of that band were interviewed and files sent forward for prosecution. And, you know, if you look at the fact that these guys were wearing boiler suits and masks,
yeah,
and actually covered up the name of the bands, because normally they would have them on the big drums, they would say, like, Ardoyne Loyalist Volunteer Band or whatever it happened to be. You know, they covered all them up, so obviously they're being recorded with the CCTV by the police. So obviously, if they're identifiable, we would assume that they would be charged, or like to think they would be charged.
Yeah, those boiler suits and the masks. I mean, it was like something from, pardon the pun, Clockwork Orange. It really was. I mean, I'm not sure if that was what their intention was. I mean, it looked quite intimidatory the way they were dressed, as well as everything else. So, what exactly is it like for residents in the Ardoyne, Catholic, Nationalist, Irish residents of the Ardoyne? What is it like for them living beside that?
Yes, well, when you see the picture on the ground, you know, North Belfast is very much like a jigsaw puzzle, you know, a small nationalist area surrounded by a larger kind of pro-British unionist one and vice versa. So actually the interface at Twaddale, they're literally people are facing each other across the street. Mm. There's a bar and the shops at Ardoyne shop front, and then there's the Twaddale Residents Association and all the people who live across the road in Twaddale Avenue. I've spoken to some of the people who would frequent the up the top of the Ardoyne Road and around the shops. I mean, they're saying businesses is really down. People are maybe concerned. They lose a lot of passengers. If you imagine a major thoroughfare where there's a continuing ongoing nightly protest, people are going to think twice about maybe going down to buy ice cream or to go to the bar or to go to the chippy and maybe just shop somewhere else. And there was an initiative in Ardoyne about 3 weeks ago where there was a leaflet campaign asking people to support the local shops because they're struggling financially. And then people going to and from church, people are just, as you can imagine, trying to get on with their lives, you know, but people are concerned about their personal safety.
Yeah.
And there is actually some headlines here that I'm looking at in the Irish News about a sectarian attack on a young man at Brompton Park, which was very, very, very serious.
Mm. Yeah, and a couple of weeks ago, back, I think it was at the end of August, wasn't it, they broke through police lines as well. The loyalist protesters broke through there. Was there any knock-on effect? Was there any attacks on residents as a result of that?
Not that I would be aware of. I mean, sectarianism is always in the background here. I mean, people talk about we're so many years into the peace process and society has radically changed for the better. It is a safer environment, but sectarianism, it's the snake that's in the grass. And loyalism is the rattle of the snake, you know, and whenever they want to, they can and do turn it on, unfortunately. And the result is anybody walking about on their own late at night is a potential target for being attacked.
Yeah. Now, members of the so-called protests at Twaddale and members of the DUP were invited on the show, and they had made some efforts to get somebody, but nobody came on the show to talk about it. And one of their mantras that seems to be coming through is respect their culture. Now, obviously, this is a question for them. It's not a question for you, but I'll put it to you anyway. I mean, how do you feel about this slogan that they're using, respect our culture, respect orange culture?
It's just, you know, I suppose it's at the very heart of everything that goes on. Yeah, you just have to, if you step back and view the situation from the outside, if that's possible at all, what you have are two totally separate, two totally disparate kind of mindsets here between the colonial occupation, which is how I would see the British influence in the north of Ireland, and the kind of native kind of rebellion against foreign occupation. You know, they're still, to me now, the Unionists, the Loyalists and the DUP are still in a 1921 kind of mindset where Ireland was partitioned. They got the new parliament that became a Protestant parliament for Protestant people. You had prime ministers on the 12th of July speaking at the field, like Brian Faulkner and Chichester Clark, and people saying that they were proud that they didn't have a Roman Catholic in their employment. I mean, that would be similar to someone in South Africa, you know, saying that they didn't have a Kaffir in their employment.
Yeah.
So I think the mindset is still in 1921 on partition. It's still going back to 1690. You know, their kind of mantra and rationale is, you know, these are our streets. You're really living here. Kind of, we're allowing you to live here, kind of, you know, if you don't like it, go and live in the Republic. You know, this is part of Great Britain. These are our streets. We'll march where we want. So, I mean, their civil rights matter is that they should be able to march anywhere they want within Northern Ireland. But when you see an organisation that seems to be anti-Catholic because you can't join it if you're... The Orange Order claims to be promoting Protestant values, but any member who marries a Roman Catholic, as far as I'm aware, must leave. You know, so it's a sectarian. It's viewed by the Irish Catholic community here as sectarian, as racist, as, you know, kind of very, very, very right-wing, very much attached to the likes of the EDL in Britain. You know, so they fundamentally have, they believe, the right to march anywhere in Northern Ireland, which I respect as a Democrat.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you're going to have sectarian songs, you're going to have military emblems, you're going to have bands that are named in honour of sectarian murderers marching past the spot where they've actually murdered Roman Catholics in Ardoyne, and singing songs, you know, about the famine and the sash, if it's perceived to be a racist march and a racist parade, akin to, say, the Ku Klux Klan marching through Harlem. I mean, it's not acceptable in a normal society. The EDL doesn't get... The EDL can apply to march anywhere it wants in Great Britain. But the local community who are against it come out and block it and they don't get through. And it's the same here, you know.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be able to march without the consent of the local community. And with the greatest respect, the people who want to march don't live in that community, you know.
Yeah.
If you're living in the upper part of Loyalist Ardoyne, and you're never down that part of the road and you never, you know, mingle with your neighbours and stuff, you can't just half a dozen times you'd have said you're going to march down the road and trample all over your neighbours. Goodwill, you know.
And Fred, just one last one for you. The visit of Richard Haass, did that make, or is that making any difference at all, or is that just purely cosmetics, do you think?
I don't know. It's very hard to say. I suppose you would have to, again, step back, give him an opportunity to see what he wants to do. But I don't see where the real compromise is going to come from. You see, the Orange Order wants to be able to walk wherever it wants, whenever it wants. Now, Sinn Féin would have a kind of fudge in this, that it's okay to march down in the morning. As if, you know, that march is okay in the morning because there's no violence associated with it. But because there's violence coming back in the evening, then you can't come back in the evening. I mean, either the march is democratic and allowable, or it's undemocratic and it's not allowable.
Yeah.
You can't have this, well, let them go down in the morning because it's morally okay to do it.
Yeah.
But it's not morally okay to let them come back at 7:30 in the evening because, you know, it kicks off violence. So I think Richard Haass, I think probably a lot of things are already decided in the background, and this will be just drip-fed a wee bit, like the peace process. Everything's already done and dusted and signed and sealed. This is a cosmetic exercise which drip-fed into general society, and people are put up as potential peace brokers.
Just leading us a merry dance. Okay, brilliant. Fry Hughes from the North West Belfast Journal. Thank you very much for joining us again.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. So that was Fry Hughes from the North West Belfast Journal, just updating us on what's happening in Tweadell and that continuing loyalist camp there, and still from the 12th of July. Okay, so on to the next part, the next guest of the evening. We're joined in studio by Mr. Sami Mukaddim.
Mukaddim, yeah, Mukaddim. Close enough, yeah.
Okay, they're close enough.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, not at all.
A quick clarification, I just got a text from a friend of mine saying that I look bored. So just to explain to whoever was looking, I couldn't hear anything in the headphones.
Okay.
So that explains it. I'm sure it's whatever the... I'm sure your guest was very interesting.
Absolutely, no, it was great. We get...
Do you need me to have this on or what?
Yeah, keep it on,
But
on.
I can't hear a thing.
You can't, well then take it off. It looks good for the camera.
Okay,
it looks good
okay,
for the
okay.
camera there, the back of the shooter. Listen, thanks very much anyway to Fry Hughes for updating us there. And if you want to participate, you can as always, texting us on 087-69-4500. Although you're probably better if you want to contact us, do it through the Facebook group, International Politics Dublin, or Twitter, Peter's Politics. You can get me right there. So, Sammy, just a quote here from the opening part of your... The last documentary you made from Hayo Meir, a Holocaust survivor, said the Palestinians are the present day victims of 1,000 years of Christian European anti-Semitism. And that's from your documentary.
Yes.
How to solve the Palestinian
Israeli problem.
Yeah. So how do we solve the Palestinian Israeli problem?
Well, the title of the film, whenever people ask me what the film's title, and I tell them, it's like, oh, really? So there's a solution. Well, the title of the film is designed to expose the fact that there was always a solution, and it's equality. Mm. You know, and that it's never been about two different people can't get along because of cultural differences. It's not that. It's the reality is that there's one group of people who are armed to the teeth, backed up by the stronger country in the world militarily, and they're slowly ethnically cleansing another people and taking their land. It's as simple as that. And if you look at South Africa, for example, you know, ultimately when slowly it was exposed what is happening to the black people, many of the Europeans who started the boycott movement simply said, we can't support this. And slowly people started to find out what's going on and that's how these things spread. So I think if people just stop for a second and look at the basic facts of who's got the power and that the Palestinians are continually losing land on a daily basis, then the solution becomes very simple. You know, when you look at who's got power, who doesn't, you know. But unfortunately, American mainstream media is constantly about confusing their people about the main issues. And what transpires in the film, you know, is that... really, ultimately, mainstream media are funded by multinational companies, and that's, you know, they work through supporting the system as it is, and so does many of the European mainstream medias as well. They confuse the main facts. They never tell you. I mean, whenever there's they play this game that we have to be fair and equal to both sides instead of just exposing the basic facts of look at how much guns this group has and look at how these people don't have. And look what's happening for the last 20 years, for example, with the peace process, is that Palestinians are losing land on a daily basis. And that's what it is. You know, there is no such thing as a peace process. And this is what needs to be exposed. Mm. You know, every time an American politician sits down with an Israeli politician, along with the whoever is happens to be representing Palestinians at the time, if the mainstream media is covering it as a legitimate process, then people's hopes are elicited as if this is something that, well, hasn't been working for now, but it might. You know, that is a lie, basically. Mm. You know, if I bring some people here with guns and we'll hold up the studio, you know, and we turn off the lights and we pretend we're having negotiations when in reality you don't have much power to negotiate with. Mm. You know, if we cover this event as a legitimate negotiation, then you're really colluding with it. Mm. And that's what happens with mainstream media. You know, I mean, at this stage, after 20 years of pretending to have a peace process, when Palestinians have gained nothing, rather they are continually losing on a daily basis, then what's been happening is really a collusion. Mm. A collusion with the loss of land, a collusion with the diminishing human rights. Yeah. Things are not getting worse. Things are not getting better, they're getting worse. Mm. You know?
And in that period of time and long before it, the Palestinians have been there since time immemorial. What role have they played in the fact, or rather Palestinian leaders, Palestinian representatives, the different groups that represent them. I mean, what role have they played in Palestinians being in the position that they're in today?
Well, I mean, I've heard so much blame put on Palestinian authorities, you know, throughout. And by all means, today, it's no secret, there's a huge level of corruption within the Palestinian authorities in the West Bank, while in Gaza, you know, whether Hamas represents its people or not. What really matters to me is that there has never been a Palestinian authority with any power to negotiate, and this is not about negotiation. You know, when a people don't have any power to negotiate with, there is no goodwill, when Israel is openly to its own, you know, within Israeli society, the politicians are openly saying, we want more land. We're not done with our expansion vision. We want more Palestinian land. You know, so what roles have they played? Well, nothing significant. Well, in the last 20 years, whatever Palestinian authorities have been ultimately in collusion with what's going on. Because ultimately, if you're negotiating and you're still losing land, isn't it about time you say, well, look, I'm not effective here. I'm not doing anything for my people. You know, so that needs to be exposed as well. But ultimately, it serves Israelis to have whoever they have on their table. You know, it serves them to have whoever is going along with this pretense that there's any negotiations, because the facts on the ground is that in the last 20 years there has been nothing much positive coming out of these for the Palestinians.
Now, in the documentary you made, I mean, you spoke to a huge number of people all over the place. I mean, was there any and people who've in many ways made it their life, and for people who it is their life, did you get any feeling from them, or was there any did they indicate in any way how they see things progressing from here? I mean, it's a huge question. I mean, given the depth of the dispute, was there any kind of feeling from people like Chomsky or any of the other people that you interviewed at all?
Well, I mean, the film is split into two different sections, which is, you know, the history, how it is today, where does it seem to be going, and then a solution. Well, what does it seems to be going? Things are getting worse. You know, there's nothing much positive happening in the near future. However, in a way, I mean, the way I see it as a psychologist, it's a little bit like if you exceptionalize a child and bring him to school and you give him free rein, well, he's going to end up bullying all the other kids if the teacher doesn't put a stop to it. You know, but if he's exceptionalized, allowed to do anything he wants, eventually he'll get a big head and bully the teacher. And then he'll bully the headmaster, and that will become a regional problem. You know, what's happening with the Israelis is that Israeli policies are, you know, the European civil society and increasingly American civil society is beginning to wake up to what Israel is doing, and it's becoming more of an embarrassment to support this. You know, so one of the things Ilan Papia was saying, you know, he's an Israeli historian, is that, well, things, they're behaving like Gaddafi. And he said this right before the Libyan revolution, you know. So they're behaving more thuggishly, less care about international opinion. So just something that is getting darker and darker. And where do you go with that?
I mean, just yourself personally, yes. I mean, how do you deal with it? I mean, if I look at my own personal self, similar, not the same, is what we have in Ireland, Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland. That's something that mentally, psychologically takes up a lot of my time and gets me down as well, thinking about it. And there's ways and means of dealing with it. I mean, is there any... How do you absorb all of that?
Well, I mean, personally, I was getting depressed. I was getting very depressed during making the film, you know. And I realized that many of the people I've interviewed are good at holding a certain... even Noam Chomsky, when I asked him, you know, he said, you know, in some of the interviews afterwards, you know, during the interview, he could be feeling like... really horrible if somebody is interviewing him with their own agenda or without a care to the human rights. So the personal thing, yes, is very hard. You know, and the more I look into the world's functioning, the more things get darker. Mm. You know, and I can relate to what you're saying. Mm. You know, on a personal level, as I was finishing it, I got interested in trying to. I mean, I knew I was going to finish the film. It was coming to an end. It was a process. It was a natural process that was finishing, and I became interested in how can I get people's attention to look at it from a different point of view. How do I get the attention of people who wouldn't necessarily normally be interested in this kind of topic? Mm. And that's how I got interested in Azizi bin Habibi.
Yeah,
is that something you want me to talk about?
I've heard a bit about what you've seen, some
of the music videos, right?
I've seen a couple. I've seen them a few times now at this stage. I mean, what more, apart from the videos that I've seen about him, what more can you tell me about
him? Well, basically, Azizi gave me some guitar lessons 30 years ago. And he inspired me with, he was kind of an underground figure for many of the Arabs, mm-hmm. you know. And for the last... he saw the film that I made, mm-hmm. you know, on Palestine. And he agreed then that I would make a documentary on mm-hmm. him. And I would allow, you know, that I would encourage him then to come to the West, come to Ireland and record some music. And with his lyrics, because I was always interested in his political views. Okay. And so what we're doing now is releasing music videos.
So he's in Ireland at the moment.
Right, for the time being. We're doing some recordings and some video recordings as well. And we're releasing music videos. You can see it on YouTube. Azizi, A-Z-I-Z-I. Bin B-I-N Habibi H-A-B-E-E-B-I, and there's a Facebook page as well, and you can see his videos. The last one is called Am I Sexy? The one before that was Noam Chomsky. It's called Lawless.
Yes, I saw that. You made him smile.
Right now I'm making a documentary on him and he's in the lobby right now. I'm not sure if you want him to talk. I can try to convince him to come here. He's not really we've had a difficult day today. You know, we've been having some.
Well, we're going to take a break for some promos now in a few seconds.
Okay.
We'll take a break for about 2 minutes. So maybe if you want to use that time, you might be able to coax them in.
Right. Okay.
Okay. We'll all right. That. So we'll just go straight to a break, and then I'll let you do the coaxing from there.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Text 087 69 44 500.
90.3 Near FM.
It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. Here's to the bands every Friday, 2 to 3.30.
For the best in metal and hard rock, plus an inside look at the Irish scene, tune into LiveWire with me, Metal Maguire, every Saturday, 7 to 8.30.
Don't believe it, but the bedding that you will.
I'm winning the muike, clorgwelgid, a crayle, a glahortraisha cuig, gok tronona, a ri, and shoftin. Over, politiocht, cursi raha, sport, pastel, august kyol. Oglov, ladini artula, obolia aclea, or huig, ogzo himple, natira. I'm winning the muike, gok la, a ri, and shoftin, a glahortraisha a cuig.
Don't forget to listen out for The Art Show, each Tuesday.
With a mixture of music, theatre, film, reviews, interviews and live studio performances, many from local artists and musicians.
The Art Show, Tuesdays.
Tuesday evenings at 7.
Sport, culture, music and more. This is Near.
90.3 Near FM.
Welcome back to International Politics. I'm Peter Carney with you Friday. Fortnightly, but as I said, from Wednesday week, we're moving to Wednesday, so you can join us then. So we're actually, Sammy was successful in his attempts to encourage Azizi bin Habibi to come into studio. So great to meet you, Azizi. I've seen several of your videos. I've seen you've been with Chomsky. You've been making all sorts of sexy videos and everything. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Peter.
Good. So
I'm happy to be here.
Good, I'm happy to have you here. So Sammy told us a bit about you, but what takes you to Ireland?
He brought me to Ireland.
He brought you?
Yes, he was trying to convince me to come here and make some music videos. I was not too sure about it. But he convinced me. He said, you people are lovely. And when I got to the airport, I looked around and he was right.
Right, okay.
Well, I like the history of this country. I like the history that Ireland has been colonized. And I think they can identify with the people who has been messed about for a long period of time.
Right.
And generally, I saw a humanity in Ireland.
Right. So do you feel a kind of a bond with Irish people in some ways?
I am
maybe?
Bonding with all of them. Especially with you right now.
You're bonding with me right now. Brilliant. What am I thinking? What am I thinking right now is easy. All right, we'll leave that for a bit. So.
No, seriously. I come here with a good feeling. And I think when you look at people in the eye and you have a good feeling for the general history and respect for the culture, they can see it in you. You know, when you're smiling directly into somebody, they smile back.
Right.
Why are you avoiding looking at me? See, now you look at me, you're smiling. Now we're both happier.
No, we're both happier. Actually, I'm happier because I got the promos lined up. That's why I'm happy. So what are you going to do with this documentary? What's going to happen with it?
Documentary?
Yes.
Yes, well, look, Sammy is convincing me to do a documentary on me.
Right.
And also encouraging me to make music videos and spread. He thinks I have a message. You know, I do believe in love.
Yeah.
And I do believe in breaking boundaries and breaking stereotypes of Arabs in this occasion. I mean, I was in here in Ireland 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it was clear to me that at the time, what Ireland were going through is what we're going through right now. Irish people were stereotyped as terrorists when they traveled to England. Mm. You know, there was that threat. You know, they looked at you people funny.
Yes.
You know, and there is also the myth of the Irish alcoholic, you know, the degrading of the Irish intellect, when in reality, you know, there is a lot of beautiful intelligence and poetry in the language. This did not suit the colonizers to have that out, because every colonizer wants to dehumanize their colonized. So, because they don't want their own people to say, well, look, they are just like us. They have flesh and blood. They go to the toilet, they hug their children, they have love. So it is always in the interest of the colonizer to demonize whoever they are colonizing. And my job in this world is to break the stereotyping across anything that separates us from each other. That is what my job, this is what I see as my mission in life. Now, Sammy is trying to convince me to make music videos, catch people's attention. That's his job to a certain extent. But, you know, I'm not... how much you can change of this world, I don't know. Mm. But we're giving it a go.
Right. And the music video, I'm too sexy.
Well, no, I never say I'm too sexy.
No. You never say that.
No, I am saying I'm certifiable sexy.
Oh, certifiable.
Not too completely, sexy. Look, it's not
different.
It's not possible for me to be too sexy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because there is no limit to my sexiness. No, in reality, that video, I Am Too Sexy,
yeah.
It starts off with exposing how we men historically have gotten a big head.
Right.
You know, and we have, I confront American politics a lot.
Right.
Okay. But I confront everybody. And the video starts with me confronting Arabs.
Uh-huh.
How Arabs blame all their problems, we blame them America and Israel.
Right.
You know, and there is a great truth to that. But we also colonize our women. We are like cutting our hearts and mind in half and discarding it and imprisoning it. When in reality, women are and femininity in the world needs to be more embraced. Mm. I start off being critical of how Arabs treat women, but I also see a problem worldwide. In America and Europe, women, I think, are being pressurized into a macho society.
So are you a feminist?
Well, I don't need to call myself anything.
Right.
All I want is for humanity to stop cornering itself into a macho vision.
Mm.
And embrace all the beautiful sides of us. Mm. And the feminine side, you know, for example, when it comes to European and American politics and how society is run, it is very macho, very competitive.
And you think you were just about to say that you think women are being forced into that role as well, are they?
Well, yes. You know, I would like to see more respect for a more feminine way of doing things. I don't mean Thatcher. Thatcher was eating metal for breakfast. I don't mean Condoleezza Rice, because she was not confronting her politics. You know, she was not standing up with respect for the American black history.
Yeah.
You know, neither is Obama. My point to you is that the feminine spirit.
Right.
You know, which
so were they kind of like women trying to be like men type?
Exactly.
Thing? Right.
You know, what I would like to see is a more balance. More, you know, even in schools, for example, the school systems to me are bullshit.
Do you think it's possible that Margaret Thatcher actually was a man?
I protected myself. I didn't get close enough to find it to find the facts on a physical level. If she touched me, I might have felt a metal thing against my body. I did not want to do that. I was not ready, Peter. I was not ready. Either that question is messing with my head. I can see myself waking up at 3 in the morning. Peter, damn you with that question. I did not need it in my fantasy. But I would like to see a more balance and more acknowledgement of what men have done, which is we have gotten with our capitalist system, you know, with which does not, you know, it's like a jungle, it's complete jungle, you know, the strongest wins, you know. I would like to see more of gentle ways of doing things while acknowledging the competitive spirit. I would like to see more gentleness in schools. You know, I would like to see more respect that the mother carries the baby and needs to spend more time with the baby. And it's not about taking money time from the company. So is the father and father's rights and all of that, you know, but the family as a unit.
Okay.
So that's one of my angles, one of many angles. I am, Peter, I am trying to fix the whole world.
I just think of that, but you've got so many angles.
But you know what? I need help.
Yeah,
this is
why
I'm here. Yeah. I need your help, Peter.
I'm here to help.
Giving it to me.
Yeah.
You're giving it to me. You know, this is what we're doing for each other, really. Yeah. What you're doing, the reason I like this show is, from what I understand, you seem to have coming from a good place. You're trying to spread connections between people.
Between people.
I just said, nearly said Peter. Everybody's Peter now.
Yeah, it was just like before you came into the studio, I was thinking that your focus was going to be on the Israel-Palestine situation, and then I thought it was going to be about Arabs and feminism. But it's like, it seems like you're ticking quite a number of boxes there, Azizi.
Well, initially, I start with home. You know, and first thing I do is look at myself and all some of my animalistic impulses.
Uh-huh.
You know, I try to challenge myself every day. Then I look at home and then I look at my neighbors. But yes, ultimately, the biggest problems the Arab have is Israel, you know. And it's basically a state that is still adamant on expanding.
Right.
It has no interest in stopping at the time being. And beyond that, I look at I take a look at America and how it funds Israel. I take a look at how money in America comes into the Arabic world and fractures the Arabic world. For example, supporting the Egyptian revolution, supporting the dictatorship and the supports to Saudi Arabia as well.
Uh-huh.
You know, but ultimately, my job is to connect people.
Yeah.
To make sure that my message is not about demonizing any people. The way I see it is that the world is run by elites, the world is run by the military industry, it's generally run by economics. The world used to be run by nations who are empires and expanding, but today what I see is that countries no longer own themselves. For example, to me, America looks like multinational companies supporting both sides. You have the option of voting for one of two parties, both supported by the same people. So after I expose everybody, we're all going to hug each other in the next... any time between now and 20 million years, there's going to be a lot more love. And thank you for this show. We are trying break stereotypes, inform the world more, and remind each other that we are all flesh.
Incredible.
Absolutely, exactly incredible. But you know, I am not saying anything new.
Right.
You know, I hope I will never say anything new, because everything that needs to be said about love and connection, whether it's Jesus Christ, you know, it's all been said before. Mm. All we have to do is constantly reinvent ways of reminding ourselves of this.
Yeah. Well, I think say nothing new. I mean, you've said quite a lot.
But none of it is new. All I'm, you know.
So what's the point then?
Well, like I said, the point is trying to, the core is not new. The core is always to say we are all the same. And let's make sure we keep our eyes open to how we've been manipulated by the minority. I that's the history of humanity.
Right.
And in the sense, when I say nothing new in terms of the core, what I'm saying, core of what I'm saying is that we are all the same. It's all about love. It's all about connecting. And but how do we keep ourselves awake from the minority that are coming up with more creative ways of controlling the majority?
Okay.
Whatever is happening with America now, it happened with the Roman Empire.
Uh-huh.
With me?
So it's collapsing. I'm with you. So it's collapsing all around
us.
Yes,
this is.
You've come just at the right time. So you've come to save. You've come to save humanity. So everybody's just going.
We're all trying to save humanity. This is, and I have no shame about saying it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't think I'm doing anything different than what you are doing.
Yeah.
Which is the. Spread some love, brother.
Spreading the love. Brilliant. Well, listen, as soon as you have something to say about everything, you might have something to say about the next program, or if you want, you're more than welcome to stay, or you can ask Sammy to come back in, because we're moving on to Iran next. Because, as you know, Iran's President Hossein Rouhani addressed the 68th United Nations General Assembly at the UN in what may have been the day's most widely awaited speech at the UN. Iran's new President Hassan Rouhani preached tolerance and understanding yesterday, denounced as a form of violence the Western sanctions imposed on his country, and said nuclear weapons had no place in his future. Well, I'm joined on the line by Mahdi Bahman, who's a sociology researcher, who's going to talk to us and tell us a little bit more about the Iranian president. Good evening to you, Mahdi.
Hello, and good evening to you.
Good stuff. Did you catch any of our last guests there?
Yes, actually, I do.
Yeah, you caught him right. You got a bit of what he was said. Okay, so I'm talking to you about President Rouhani and in relation to his recent visit to the UN. And what can you tell us about that, in the sense of how significant is that visit?
Okay, firstly, I'd like to say hello to your listeners and to you as well.
Uh-huh.
And thank you for giving this the advantage of this opportunity.
Uh-huh.
In regards of your question, I actually have some notes. You know, in my point of view, actually, I think that it was the first time for President Rouhani, as the Iranian president, new Iranian president, to address the world from a worldwide forum. I mean, from a worldwide media. I can call it as a media.
Mm.
I mean, the General Assembly opportunity. And, he is the new Iranian president. He's as well the head of NAM, Non-Allied Government, Non-Allied Movement. And his proposal is important for many politicians to know his attitude, to know his strategy, and to follow the plans and the actions.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do Iranians feel about President Rouhani as opposed to Ahmadinejad?
It's a different question.
Put you on the spot there.
In personal character, I can't judge.
Mm.
Based on my understanding and as far as I know, the key interest, the key goals of Iran's interests are not that different. I mean that Rouhani's government, Rouhani's administration, and Ahmadinejad's administration are not different in these goals, I mean, in key goals. And if there is any difference, it's just in wording, you know, and in the, you know, the way of, you know, the way of negotiation, just in these. This is my belief, I don't know. But as you heard, President Rouhani declared and stated that his proposal, I mean, in the General Assembly, that we have to form a coalition for peace against a coalition for war. And this is very, very useful for the world now at this time, because the military means have been proved that they are not that, you know, useful, and that they are not that effective. And you have to form a coalition for peace. And in this paradigm, in this, you know, framework, it is possible to negotiate. It is possible to do other practice than war and then military actions.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry. But about your question about President Rouhani and Iranian people, I had to add some other notes. And, you know, the election was among six candidates from different political parties and from different political attitudes in Iran. I mean, considerable variety. And people among those candidates trusted President Rouhani, and he was elected. You know, the turnout of the election was 73%. And, you know, in the first stage, he has been elected with more than 50% of the, you know, votes
right.
People have made. And I think it is a proof that people trusted him and
he has the popular support in Iran. Now, one thing that what seems to constantly make the news here about Iran is Iran's apparent nuclear program. There seems to be an absolute obsession about it, and it has led to sanctions being imposed upon Iran from the West and so on. Is that something that Iranians think about, or what? It would be the position of Iranian people on Iran's nuclear program. Is it even a topic of discussion in Iran?
Honestly, I have to say that it is unfortunate for me that the first thing that every you know, audience that hear about Iran, the first thing is nuclear energy. Unfortunately, but. In a positive attitude, it is not that bad, because it's an opportunity to discuss about the Iranian capability to, you know, to develop the scientific fields. But first of all, in this case, I had to say that thousand hours of inspections and supervision on the Iranian nuclear nuclear energy so far doesn't prove anything. I mean, anything against the peaceful usage of Iran's nuclear energy and nuclear plant.
The sanctions that are imposed by Western countries on Iran, are they felt by Iranian people? Is it noticeable?
Absolutely, it's not reasonable. Absolutely, and you know, the politician says that the sanctions are, you know, in order to affect politicians, but it is just on paper. On practice, the people are the first, I'm looking for the suitable word.
Yeah.
They are, the people are the first thing suffered by the sanctions. you know, during the last year, many Iranians has died because of the sanctions that you know, it was the Western countries.
Yeah.
Did not allow to export some medical help to Iran.
Okay.
And especially people with some, you know, with some cancer and some, you know, other diseases has died because of these sanctions.
Okay.
This is just one aspect, and there are another aspect that it has affected the economy, that, you know, it's related to people's life in Iran.
Okay. Okay. Mahdi, I hope you can hear us well there, because I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you at the moment. So hopefully you can hear me well. Just also to ask you about his statement in relation to the Holocaust, because that's what was making the news quite a lot as well. Now, there was a lot of confusion over what he'd actually said as to whether he had utterly denounced the Holocaust and Hitler and so on and so forth, which would have distanced him from Ahmadinejad's position. And then, of course, when people listen back to it in Farsi, that they said that no, he hadn't said anything that extreme at all. Now, so it's hard to know exactly what was said. Did he completely denounce it, or was it a play to hardliners in Iran? In many respects, that can be, might not be terribly relevant, but how has that news been received? So how would people, I mean, is that something, is that important to people in Iran, what their president, the president's position on the Holocaust, given the controversy that was created in relation to Ahmadinejad's statements on it?
Yes, let me answer these questions with an introduction.
Okay.
A big misunderstanding about Holocaust has been shaped by media, you know. President Ahmadinejad at that time didn't deny Holocaust, you know. He just asked and he just presented, mentioned a question about the Holocaust. Because at that time, I remember that he said that we condemn any atrocity in any place, in each place,
yeah,
in each races, in each, you know, religion, in each belief, from each belief.
Hmm.
But it is clear that Hitler killed and massacred many Jewish people,
hmm,
but not just Jewish people. He killed
all sorts,
Christian people. Yeah,
yeah.
It is really condemned. I mean that Iranian government, Iranian people, always condemned any atrocity in the world,
yeah,
and this is not exception. And we believe that President Rouhani stated clearly that we have to form a coalition for peace, and
yeah,
that's why he condemned Holocaust and any.
Absolutely, it's a real nasty one to throw at anybody. I mean, what are you supposed to say when somebody mentions the Holocaust? I mean, it was a real, you know what I mean? How are you going to come out of that one? Well, it was a real, it was a nasty one to put his way. And I mean, if people are genuinely interested in peace and healing wounds, then they wouldn't be throwing around questions on that. Okay, listen, Mahdi, we'll have to leave it at that. Mahdi Bahman, a sociology researcher from Iran in Ireland. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Gave me the opportunity of peace time. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Okay, and thanks a million to Mahdi for his contributions and filling us in a little bit, because we haven't covered Iran on the show before and it's a place I want to know a lot more about. So thanks very much for joining us on that. So I'm not sure, is Azizi still in the studio? He is.
Yes, I think he's still here.
You're still here.
Do you want me to make a couple of comments on what some of the questions you asked?
Well, yeah, by all means. I mean,
how much time do you have?
Well, don't worry, I'll give you a signal when we've got about 3 minutes.
I heard one of the questions and I went outside and I was taking a look at Israel from the balcony and I could see it.
You could see Israel from the balcony?
Yes, I could see so many nuclear weapons they have. And I was about to ring America and say, hey, are you going to do sanctions on Israel as well? But I didn't have the number. And you know what? With the Holocaust question, next time somebody asks about the Holocaust, why are you talking about something that happened 70 years ago when there are so many atrocities that are happening today? Why is that central to what is happening to the Iranian people? Is it any reason to put sanctions on them? Why is everything has to go back to an acknowledgement of what happened or not happened? Maybe Ahmadinejad was mentioning it to get some passionate response from his people. But either way, maybe we shouldn't deal with it. Maybe we should, if it's an issue, maybe we should prioritize issues. Deal with the issues that are affecting the world today.
So you think the Holocaust is not an issue that's affecting us today? So there's issues more pressing, that's more present.
Well, let's start with today and go backwards.
Okay.
We'll get to it eventually.
Yes.
But all I'm saying is, let's look at how it's being used today. Why is the Holocaust is constantly coming up when Israel is committing atrocities in the name of the Holocaust? Why should the Iranian people, even if they have somebody who's a leader who is using it in one way or another? And by the way, when it comes to translations, we should really find out what is being translated by somebody who's Iranian, not just by American mainstream media who want to put a spin on it. You know?
Great. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's just a little point.
It's just a little one. Just a small point.
Yeah, well, look, at the end, the question is, what have we learned about the Holocaust?
Yeah, and what have we learned? Have we actually, from when you look around the world at Rwanda, Yugoslavia, Palestine, what the Israelis are doing in Palestine, have we actually learned anything from the Holocaust?
Yeah, we have learned to keep on doing it. And in the case of the Holocaust itself, unfortunately, I think it disrespects the victims of the Holocaust to use it in such a way to distract, to evoke guilt with Europeans who colluded with this and Americans who colluded with this, and continue to have hypocritical standards. What we need to learn from the Holocaust is not to harm anybody. Mm. That's what we need to do.
Okay, Azizi bin Habibi, thank you very much for joining us.
I'm sure thank you, Peter. I love you, my brother.
I love you too. You'll be in again at some stage, I'm sure, will you?
I'm here still.
You're still here. Are you
confident I'm going to go?
Okay, no, I'm going to turn. You can sit there, but I'm going to turn off your mic.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks very much. And thanks to Sammy as well for coming in and talking to us about his projects. Yeah, we can still hear you. They can still hear you. To Fry Hughes from the Northwest Belfast Journal, who gives us regular updates on what's happening up in Twaddell or Twaddle, as we agreed upon. And as well, thank you very much to Mahdi Bahman, the sociology researcher from Iran, for talking to us about Iran, a place I'd like to know more about, and for keeping people informed on that. So that's about it from us this fortnight. As I said, we're moving to Wednesdays from Wednesday week. So that is Wednesday week, which is October the 9th, still at 6 p.m. So readjust your calendar and all that kind of stuff. You can get us online, podcasts on the Near FM website. So from Azizi, Sammy and all the rest, and from me, Peter Carney, until then, take care.
From Baldoyle to Beaumont.
Community radio for North East Dublin. 90.3. Near FM.